I'm Brandi Cruz. Coming up today on Undivided, a bill to criminalize child gender mutilation passes the U.S. House of Representatives. We'll have reaction from both sides. Plus, why are some local energy customers still seeing COVID-19 charges on their bill? And more leaked video from the Washington Education Association, this time a strategy session on how they're going to help Democrats tax you more. That and much more coming up today on Undivided. Remember, you can support our show for just $5 a month. It's just $5 by signing up at UndividedPod.com. Sometimes I feel like if I get higher pitched, then it just sells better. $5 a month. UndividedPod.com. UndividedPod.com. That's P-O-D.com. Click on the banner that says support the show. To Undivided. Thank you for being here. Thank you so much for your commitment to giving Common Sense a comeback. I'm Brandi Cruz. Oh, I'm going to miss you guys. A little show note. I have my Christmas blazer on, though. Not quite Christmas yet, but it's my last opportunity because we are off of our live shows the rest of the year. We have a ton of great content coming up, though. We are not missing any episodes of Sundays with Subscribers. We've got great guests for you coming up. And then we will be back regular live shows the 5th of January. So just in time for a busy legislative session. But again, we're not abandoning you entirely. We just won't have the live shows. So you can keep in touch with what we're doing on Patreon, Locals, and X. More on all that housekeeping coming up. But first, the Protect Children's Innocence Act has passed in the United States House of Representatives. This is such a important topic for us here on the show. I know for a lot of you. And essentially what it would do is criminalize transgender surgeries for minors. The vote was mostly along party lines, although there were some Democrats who voted for the bill. There were some Republicans who voted against the bill. It creates new federal crimes that carry up to 10 years in prison for doctors performing transgender, quote, affirming surgeries on minors. Also makes it a crime to prescribe puberty blockers in most instances. And parents or guardians of children under 18 could be held criminally liable if they consent to or otherwise facilitate transgender treatment for their kids. The bill is something that Congresswoman Marjorie Taylor Greene, who, as you know, is on her way out the door, has been trying to get passed for years. Here's what she had to say about it.
One of the most serious responsibilities we have as adults, and particularly those of us who are elected and hold power when it comes to legislating and making laws, is to protect children. Today, the House is delivering on what the American people voted for, the opportunity to vote to end the genital mutilation of children via transgender treatments for children. This important bill that I've introduced years ago and finally is getting a vote today will let the House set to vote on this afternoon will criminalize gender-affirming care on minors, not adults, on minors who have not yet grown up to make adult decisions. It will end genital mutilation and chemical castration of children and imprison offenders for up to 10 years. This is a direct legislative reflection of President Trump's executive order and every single Republican's campaign promise in 2024. It was also one of the top issues across the country. Most Americans agree that kids just need to grow up before they do anything radical like a mastectomy on a 15-year-old girl, castrate themselves through surgery, or even take dangerous drugs that have lifelong effects.
Wow. That picture next to her, in case you're just listening, she had this picture next to her of a 15-year-old girl who had her breasts removed. It is absolutely heartbreaking. And one of the things that's so stunning are the lies that are told by Democrats to continue to justify this in some sick sense. And again, as she said there, this isn't about adults. If you want to do really whatever as an adult and just, you know, mind your own business and be left alone, you know, fine. This is a totally different situation. This is for kids. And you could tell by that picture she had there. That is a little girl who hasn't even fully developed yet, who's mutilated her body, who will be changed for the rest of her life, you know, might come to her senses or get out of the grasp of whatever adult is convincing her to do this. And she can't undo what she has done. And so Marjorie Taylor Greene is standing next to this picture. And you still have some Democrats who take to the floor of the House and pretend as if what's in that picture isn't really happening.
There are not words strong enough to express my disgust. Surgery, gender-affirming surgery is never performed on young children, as it's extremely rare for older transgender adolescents.
No, it's not.
Every parent wants what's best for their children. And as a parent, I cannot imagine how I would feel if a doctor told me that Republicans in Congress banned life-saving evidence-based care that would help my child. Medical care for transgender youth is safe and effective and supported by major medical associations. Access to transgender-related health care is critical, medically necessary, and often life-saving.
Even for Republicans, this is extreme. Are we really attempting to lock up parents and doctors? Your kids' medical care is none of their damn business. We should call this obsession with your kids and what treatment they're getting in the pediatrician's office what it is. It's creepy. It's a creepy obsession, and we've had to deal with it for years. The science is clear. Evidence-based, medically necessary care for transgender youth is safe, it's effective, it's supported by every major medical association in the United States, including the American Medical Association and the American Academy of Pediatrics.
Which isn't entirely true, because we know that there's increasing criticality of the quote-unquote science behind it. A lot of European countries who got a head start on this insanity have now started to back away from it. That's just factual. You know, one of the main studies that's used to suggest that if kids don't get this care, we'll kill themselves has been debunked for a long time. Information was cherry picked out of it, when in reality, even if they don't get this surgery versus if they do get this surgery, there was higher rates of suicide among transgender individuals who did get surgery and went on to regret it. So the science isn't on their side anymore. And at the very least, the science is starting to be questioned in a way that ought to give us pause before we mutilate children in a way that will impact the rest of their lives and potentially stop them from being able to have children and start a family. And I find it interesting, one of the things that Congresswoman said at the end there about, oh, you have no business, the government has no business getting in the way of parents and their children. What the freak is happening in Washington State? How convenient is that? Whenever it comes, though, to transing kids, it's either you want parents involved or you don't want parents involved. When it comes to transing kids and education in Washington State, oh, parents are evil. We can't have parental rights. But then we have parents who do want to trans their children. All those parents are great. The government shouldn't get in the way of what they're trying to do whatsoever. It's absolutely outrageous. Congressperson Sarah McBride, a biological man who identifies as a woman, spoke to the media after the vote.
They are obsessed with trans people. I actually think they think more about trans people than trans people think about trans people.
I highly doubt that. And as I've said many times, if your goal was really to be left alone and to live your lives, we wouldn't be talking about this at all. But you don't want to be left alone. You want attention, attention, attention. You want to force people to accept biological falsehoods. You want to force yourselves as men into women's spaces, which makes it our problem, which makes it our issue. And then you want to mutilate children before they've even gone through puberty, which makes it our issue, which makes it our problem. Because there are many, many things over the course of history, many types of procedures that doctors that used to be accepted, even though there was no scientific basis for them, and now, like bleeding, oh, you're sick? Let's just cut your arm open and get some blood out of you, and that ought to make you better. For some reason, they thought that was a good idea. Clearly not. And they stopped doing that. There are a ton of different types of procedures that doctors are prohibited by law from performing. And so don't pretend as if, oh, my position on this used to be, as I've said many times, oh, parental rights. I've got to be for parental rights. So if parents want to mutilate their kids, then parents should be able to do that. No, they shouldn't. Same way in Washington State that they banned conversion therapy. So you wouldn't have a Democrat sit there and argue, which, by the way, I'm against. I'm opposed to conversion therapy. But Democrats have no moral consistency. They would say, oh, doctors can't perform conversion therapy on something just because their parent might want it. But oh my gosh, doctors can mutilate a kid because their parent wants it. makes no sense whatsoever. I wanted to play a couple clips from the both sides of the issue from Congress members from Washington State. We have a 10-person congressional delegation, and it voted along party lines. Every single Democrat, including Marie Glusenkamp-Perez down in the third, which if I were her, I would have sat that vote out, because that is a very controversial position to take, that you support the continued mutilation of kids when you're in a swing district and are going to be in the fight of your life against State Senator John Braun to keep your seat. But every single Democrat voted against this. The two Republicans voted in favor of it. I am just shocked and dismayed at Congresswoman Kim Schreier, who's a pediatrician who apparently supports mutilating kids.
I have served children and their families for over 20 years, and I find this piece of legislation to be dangerous and an absolute slap in the face for parents and for doctors who have dedicated their lives to caring for children and families.
Caring for children. Congresswoman, you cannot believe that this is caring for children. You cannot believe that. I mean, at some point, this will be in the dustbin of American history, world history, and political history. And we'll reflect back at this period of time with shock and horror at the atrocities that we allowed to be committed by doctors against minors. And you still have all these Democrats, except for, I think, three or four who voted with Republicans, who are now on the record saying they support the continued mutilation of children. Outrageous. I do want to note, I spoke to outgoing now Congressman Dan Newhouse, a Republican from Washington State, who yesterday announced his retirement, that he will not be seeking re-election. So I was doing an interview with him this morning that will air this week on Sundays with subscribers about his decision to leave. But of course, our interview came right after this vote. And he expressed that same sentiment that I have, that I can't believe we're even having debates about this stuff still.
Apparently, it's not obvious to some people how crazy it is. And so for us to continue pushing back, passing whatever legislation we can that will positively impact the kind of efforts that are going on in states like Washington, absolutely, I'm going to support that, whether it's making sure that parents have a role in their students' education. Another no-brainer, but here we are trying to fight that battle, making sure that that men stay out of women's sports. I can't even believe that we're talking about this as an issue. Why is this even a question? But that's the kind of things that that we'll continue to push back on and fight as hard as we can.
Yeah, and so I'm going to have a longer conversation with Congressman Newhouse this Sunday, and it's a little bit of an audible. I had said that we're going to have on Assistant Attorney General Harmeet Dillon, which we are still. We're just going to feature that interview the following Sunday, because this Congressman Newhouse interview is so timely, so we want to get that to you guys this Sunday. So a little bit of audible I called there. But we talk about this issue with Congressman Newhouse and a lot of other things. But back to the now House vote to ban mutilation of children. So it looks like the White House is trying to approach this from a couple different ways. And I don't know if the Senate will have enough votes to be able to pass this bill or some version of it and get it to the president's desk. But as you know, the president already had an executive order on this issue that would basically look at funding being sent to medical institutions that were performing these surgeries. And so as a result of his executive order that threatened to withhold funding, what did you see? Well, you saw some medical institutions that just said, we can't afford to lose that money. And so we are not going to perform these surgeries for the time being. Now, the issue with that is that the president will only be in office for 3 more years and nothing is promised. So we don't know what happens, who's elected next. Will they undo that EO? Probably. Will these hospitals go back to performing those surgeries? So I think it has to be stopped in a more robust way, something that's maybe harder to undo. So you've got the executive order, you've got this legislative fix, which is being sent through right now, will go over to the Senate. And then at the same time, the HHS Secretary RFK Jr. announced that he's signing a directive that will ban trans surgeries for minors nationwide, and it will leverage Medicare and Medicaid. So basically, the new proposed rules that he's signing, I'll play a clip from him momentarily, would prohibit hospitals from participating in Medicare and Medicaid if they provide care such as puberty blockers and surgeries for transgender minors. And so that would be a huge deal for hospitals. Here's what he had to say about it.
Doctors assume a solemn obligation to protect children. Yet doctors across the country now provide needless and irreversible sex-rejecting procedures. that violate their sacred Hippocratic oath by endangering the very lives that they are sworn to safeguard. They betrayed the estimated 300,000 American youth ages 13 to 17, conditioned to believe that sex can be changed. They betrayed their Hippocratic oath to do no harm. So-called gender-affirming care has inflicted lasting physical and psychological damage on vulnerable young people. This is not medicine, it is malpractice. We're done with junk science driven by ideological pursuits, not the well-being of children. Guided by gold standard science and the week one executive order from President Trump to protect children from chemical and surgical mutilation. This morning I signed a declaration. Sex-rejecting procedures are neither safe nor effective treatment for children with gender dysphoria.
Yeah, so there would no longer be federal coverage for such treatments. And so whether that will be enough to change the calculation of medical centers that continue to provide them despite the president's original executive order. So you've really got three tactical approaches to this issue. And I think, again, we're going to put this behind us pretty soon. And I hope to God that that's true. I feel the same way about boys and girls sports and just this out of control, radical gender ideology. Now, I do believe we have to use some caution as we approach this, because you can take things so far that then the pendulum goes back in the other direction and we find ourselves back in this insane situation. And so I think it's important for all of us as we discuss this issue to use care and compassion, to never make it about the kids or vilifying the kids. This is an adult issue, and to speak to and talk about the changes in, you know, medical institutional knowledge about these issues, what's happening in Europe, what's happening in other places, and just driving home this idea that, hey, it's one thing if you want to let your kid change their clothes and present as a different gender. I mean, I know we all have some disagreements with that. It's a different thing entirely to make a decision that will change your child's life forever in an irreversible way. And so I think just making sure that our conversations about this aren't matching the extremism of the other side that led us to this place, because when this change happens, we want it to stick. We need it to stick so we can move forward as a country and out of this insane period of time. Kind of related to this, because it has to do with radical gender ideology, this is our last hurrah for the two Let's Go Washington initiatives. One has to do with parental rights to make sure that they're not transing your kid in schools in Washington state, which we know, and we've spoken on this show multiple times to parents on the record whose kids were being transed behind their back in public schools in Washington. This is happening. It's not some figment of the right's imagination. Haven't made it up. You can watch our documentary, Operation Indoctrination, and hear it for yourself. And then the other one, of course, to keep girls' sports female and to say biological boys cannot participate. So here's the deal. If you have these forms at home, you have to mail them tomorrow. Tomorrow really is the deadline, because they need to get them in the mail and get them counted and get them to the Secretary of State's office. So today or tomorrow, you've got to do that. Push it to Saturday, maybe, but at least by the end of the day, Saturday. And then you will continue to see individuals out there collecting signatures. If you go to letsgowa.com, you can ask them, hey, do you have a location this weekend where I can get, you know, my name on paper and get this done? Because I'll tell you guys, it's going to be close. And it will set back our fight against radical gender ideology like five freaking years if we cannot get these things across the finish line. They'll go in front of the legislature. I think the legislature is run by a bunch of cowards, and they're not going to give them hearings. So it's very likely that if we can get enough signatures, this is going to be on the ballot next November. And we have one hell of a fight. Just getting enough signatures is like 10% of the battle. The big war is yet to come. It's a war of information. It's going to be a war of continued harassment, intimidation, assault, and vilification against people who just want these common sense policies. So we've got a big fight ahead, but we've got to finish the first battle to be able to keep fighting in the months to come. We mentioned on the show yesterday our friend Andre Scott, who's one of the paid signature gatherers that is out there at grocery stores, etc., collecting signatures. And as you guys know, we broke the news on the show yesterday that so he'd been assaulted earlier this week outside of Hagen, my friendly local neighborhood Hagen. I love Hagen, a Hagen in Woodinville, and it's tainted now by a radical leftist who tried to punch Andre Scott multiple times for just being out there collecting signatures. As we know, that individual was arrested, thankfully, booked into jail on assault. Andre, there was people who were going out trying to find Andre and visit him, which I thought was really nice. And someone recorded this video.
I got assaulted last night. A gentleman came up and tried to slug me in the face, and I end up blocking the first punch, and then he tried to hit me again with the second punch. Why, then he hit my boards and everything went everywhere. Well, as I got up to retaliate, to go after the guy, there was a bystander. One of you guys came to my rescue and kind of wrestled the guy. I take my hat off to that young man, because if he wouldn't have been here, there ain't no telling what would have transpired. But it's people like that that make me want to come back, guys. And so I'm going to continue to do what I do for you folks and get both these issues on the get both these initiatives off the ground and on the ballot.
Yeah, I love that. And he wanted to take an opportunity to thank the bystander who stepped in, a young man, to pull his assailant off of him and to help him in that moment. That video was recorded by @EJ70 on X and posted. So I thought that was a nice message. So he's going to continue to be out there. Assault be damned. And he's dealt with a lot of stuff. And so you'll probably see him and others out at grocery stores. As I told you guys on the show yesterday, protect them if you can. Stand with them if you can. Ask them, have you been okay today? Have you had any problems? Do you need someone to stand with you for a little bit to help collect signatures so we can get this thing across the finish line? And meanwhile, we're working on what was that?
Oh, I was just going to say, Andre's from Texas.
I know.
He's just doing this because he believes in it.
Well,
I mean, he's
doing
making
it because
money,
it's a job, but yes.
Of course. But I mean, this is what he said. He doesn't have to take this assault. There's other initiatives in California and all these places that aren't getting assaulted.
Yep.
But he said, I'm doing this because I believe in it and I'm
going
to continue doing it.
Yep. Yeah. Now it's personal.
Yeah.
And it's like, you thought he's been had signature sheets ripped from him, destroyed. He's been assaulted and he's now you think that that's going to deter him? He is undeterred. And we love that. So you will have more on that. Of course, it's not an issue that's going away. Meanwhile, for those of you emailing us about this, I just want to note that we are getting emails from concerned parents about a boy wrestling as a girl. At a Puyallup school in the 190-pound weight class. I want you to know we're aware of that. We're working to get some information from the school because that is, you know, it's all bad with men participating against girls, boys participating against girls. But wrestling is like a different thing. You're like hands-on. It's one thing if a girl chooses to compete against boys in wrestling. Some girls do that because they don't have a girls' wrestling team or whatever it is. That's a girl putting herself in that situation. But girl trying to be a girl, wrestle against other girls, having to wrestle against a boy, that's absurd. Like, when are we going to realize that's absurd? So it's probably a story we're going to track into the new year. Meanwhile, I've told the Washington Education Association, there's nowhere left for you to hide. Your meetings, your strategy sessions, we're probably going to get a hold of them. And, you know, whether that just sends them deeper underground, I don't know. But I know it angers them every time we air clips from one of their meetings. So why not have that happen again, our final show of the year. Also, some credit to our friend Alicia Perkins, who helps bird dog these stories. She's just great with OSD Rescue. So last week, the Washington Education Association held a strategy meeting. So this is their strategy as a union behind the scenes for basically the legislative agenda. I mean, the union controls the Democratic Party in the majority. So this is them basically strategizing on camera about what they're going to force Democrats to do. And so whatever they say in this strategy session is basically the strategy of the party in power. And they talked a lot about more generally taxation. But Larry Delaney, who's the president of the Washington Education Association, said something very interesting, that he believes that teachers are their foot soldiers in pushing their radical agenda.
Educators, you know, when we tell our stories, we are trusted messengers. You know, there's a national narrative out there. But we know that you all, our members, are trusted messengers. So thank you all for having those conversations and sharing your stories.
Yeah, thanks for going out and lying for us. You know, because we know the WEA has been spreading lies about the initiatives. Oh, it's going to lead to genital exams of kids. So this is, you know, Larry Delaney telling his good, obedient foot soldiers, get out there and spread lies on behalf of the WEA, because people believe teachers. And I'm not trying to vilify all teachers. But the teachers who are hook, line, and sinker, absolutely in it for the WEA and their radical ideology, they're going to be out there spreading lies about all sorts of things, not just the initiatives, new taxes as well. So we know Democrats are going to try to pass an income tax this session. They've made that very clear. Well, who wants them to pass an income tax? The Washington Education Association. So I guarantee behind the scenes, the WEA has been pushing and pushing and prodding Democrats to get it done and get it done now. So one of the people who spoke on this meeting is Jared Mason Gear. He's a lobbyist for the WEA. And you can tell and what they're talking about is their public talking points. How are they going to sell new taxes to the populace?
There is a message out there that really comes from folks who are predisposed to be advocates for smaller government, who I think aren't as strong of supporters for key services as the average Washingtonian is. And there's a lot of people that just don't want to have to pay more. You know, people who have an immense amount of resource who really want to protect that and don't want to have to pay more in taxes, despite the enormous wealth that they've already accrued. We are pushing back against those messages in a variety of ways. The strongest thing that we can do is just continue to tell our side of the story. We know that that always, but particularly in this moment in time, Washingtonians are strongly aligned with us in our message that we need to fund schools, we need to fund core services, and it's time for millionaires and billionaires to pay their fair share after many years of essentially getting off scot-free in Washington State.
Okay, time for millionaires and billionaires to pay their fair share. They're essentially getting off scot-free in Washington State. We have a capital gains tax. We have taxes specifically designed to punish the quote-unquote rich. Seattle has a tax specifically aimed at Amazon for paying people too much money. This notion that the millionaires and billionaires are getting off scot-free after you just passed the largest tax increase in state history into law, much of that on the backs of business owners, many of whom, yes, are making millions of dollars a year. The idea that they've gotten off scot-free is about the stupidest thing I've heard the WEA say. And that is really saying a lot because they say a lot of dumb stuff. And what's interesting here is in this meeting, they're not just advocating for increased taxes to fund education. I mean, it's not necessarily the surprise of the century to hear a teacher's union trying to get more money for education. They want, you know, bigger salaries, all these things. That's why they picket all the time and strike all the time. So this wouldn't necessarily be a surprise if we had them in there talking about we want more taxes to fund education. No, again, Larry Delaney, the WEA president, makes it clear that this is about pushing a wider political and progressive agenda.
What's our organizational response to the deficit? Are we explicitly saying as a union we're going to tax billionaires so social services are no longer cut? You know, the ultra rich, you know, call them billionaires, call them the ultra rich. But yes, I mean, we have a regressive structure, as Jared mentioned, I believe earlier. We're the second most regressive. Only Florida is more regressive than Washington. So, you know, ultimately, you know, we can cobble around the edges of budgets and but if we're going to see a real change in the way that education is funding, and I'll go beyond education. You know, we know that in addition to education, we have housing issues in Washington. We have food issues in Washington, you know, healthcare, both physical and mental, transportation, jobs. And I know I'm leaving some things off of that list, but we know the needs are great and the revenue is not there to support it. You know, I'll also add, we have the 50th lowest reserves of any state in the country.
Yeah. Why do you think that is? I mean, Republicans literally said, hey, stop spending our reserves, stop spending so much. They did it anyway. COVID-19 hit, and now we're in this predicament. And for him to say, oh, we have all these needs and the revenue doesn't support it, our budget has increased 176% since 1991, even after accounting for inflation. It's because people like you in the unions go to your puppets, you know, in the Democratic Party, and you want all these things and you want to push your radical ideology and not just out totally outside the school system for all these other things and the socialist agenda that you want to pay for. And they're trying to pay for too many things. The government's trying to do too many things. So even though it raises revenue every single year, more taxes, more taxes, more taxes, then you just come up with more things that those taxes should go to. like laser hair removal for transgender inmates, boob jobs for transgender inmates, a Department of Equity that does virtually nothing. The list goes on, $250 million so black people can buy homes and pay off their credit cards. The list goes on and on and on. I'm about to do a story segment coming up about all the money rushing in for the Climate Commitment Act that we were made to believe was going to save the environment. And in fact, it's being spent on virtually nothing of import. So it's just wild. So the Washington Education Association, on video, behind the scenes, strategizing for how they're going to message to the public to convince the public that we need new taxes, including an income tax. And they're going to do that by painting people as rich and greedy, horrible human beings who don't want to fully fund education and all these other necessities. Great. Thanks for letting us know what you're up to, WEA. All right. One more quick reminder on the initiative front. Get those in by tomorrow. Also a reminder of Initiative 26-126, which is the Proof of Citizenship Initiative being run by the Washington State Republican Party. It's time to start getting those in as well. There's different. It's not Let's Go Washington. So make sure that you touch base with the Washington State Republican Party to know what to do with those initiative forms. But the clock is ticking. All right. Are we in a tech bubble? Are we in an AI bubble? Are we in, I don't know, any other sort of bubble? Are you concerned about your retirement portfolio? Is it properly protected against risk? If the answer is no or I don't know, reach out to my friend Zach Abraham at Bulwark Capital, and he can talk about and answer any questions that you might have about the risk exposure of your specific retirement portfolio and investments. It's really just about getting a second opinion. We get a second opinion on all sorts of things. Why not something as critical as our retirement and whether we're going to have enough money to live the retirement that we dream of? So you can get Bulwark Capital's free Know Your Risk portfolio review at knowyourriskpodcast.com. Sign up for it there. Zach Abraham and Bulwark Capital are focused on risk management, built around the fundamentals of value investing. Bulwark is always looking for opportunities to lower risk, lower cost, and give your retirement as much upside as possible. So schedule your free Know Your Risk portfolio today at knowyourriskpodcast.com. And while you're there, you can sign up to get Zach Abraham's personal market updates delivered right to you every single day. So knowyourriskpodcast.com, knowyourriskpodcast.com. All right, on the subject of new taxes, which is absolutely going to happen this session. So remember, Bob Ferguson said he's not using new taxes to balance the budget, but he's being very careful in his language. And we know that Democrats are going to try to push through an income tax, and they're not going to introduce it unless they believe that the governor will sign it. So I think that agreement has already been made. I know the governor is very scared of the teachers union and going against them. So it's really, if I look at the hierarchy, it's the teachers union, it's the Democrats in the legislature, and then it's the governor, Bob Ferguson. So he's going to do what the people above him want to do. And they're complaining about, oh my gosh, we're in the poorhouse. We're absolute paupers. Despite the fact, is a pauper, right? I'm a poor pauper. Why does it sound weird when I say that? Yeah, that's the phrase for it, right? A poor person, a pauper. But they're not. They've had billions in new revenue and through billions in new taxes, including one of the biggest windfalls for the state, the Climate Commitment Act, which you had an opportunity to get rid of, but voters were lied to by people like the WEA and the Democrats, and they were convinced to keep the Climate Commitment Act, even though it's a total scam. So the Climate Commitment Act taxes polluters, and so that's why you have higher energy rates. That's why you have higher prices at the pump, because they're just passing those costs on to you. The state has gotten billions of dollars into its coffers through the Climate Commitment Act. And so they're over here and they're talking, complaining, oh, we don't have money for education, we don't have money for healthcare, we don't have money for all these critical things. And then it has this pool of money coming in through the Climate Commitment Act that it's using for climate-related things. And a lot of it is just nonsense. And this is a great example from our friend Todd Myers with the Washington Policy Center. So they're using more money from the Climate Commitment Act to help bicyclists than they are to deal with the immense catastrophic flooding that were happening, despite the fact that flooding concerns was a key reason that they had to pass the Climate Commitment Act and the carbon taxes in the first place. So Todd Myers reports, reducing the risk of flooding caused by climate change was one of the primary justifications for passing Washington's CO2 tax. And that is what they said, is like, oh, climate change in Washington is going to lead to catastrophic flooding. We need the Climate Commitment Act. But in the first 2 years, just 0.5% of the billions of dollars that have come in went to flooding programs. 0.5%. He said that's twice as much as was spent on bicycle education for school kids. Or twice as much was spent on bicycle education for school kids. So, okay. So, and I'll break down the numbers in a second. But again, one of the primary reasons they said we needed the massive CCA is climate change was going to cause historic flooding in Washington state. The snow caps will melt. We'll all be underwater. It's existential. Yet they're spending twice as much on bicycle education for school kids. Okay.
What do you need to be educated about? Here's how to ride a bike.
Ride a bike. And what? Right. Right. What is it? Wear a helmet. Wear the pads on your elbows and your knees. Look both ways. Basic bicycle safety. I'm pretty sure parents teach it for free.
Exactly.
No, but the state has to spend millions of dollars on it. Again, from Policy Center, according to the state's recently released list of projects, just one half of 1% of the $1.5 billion already spent on climate projects went to address the risk of flooding. Instead of going to projects to reduce the impact of floods, much of the $7.1 million spent on flooding projects went to staffing and planning. So you already have this money that's being $7.1 million being spent so far on flooding, right, of the $1.5 billion in CCA funds they've spent. But a lot of that is just spent on bureaucracy. It's not even spent on anything that's actually addressing flooding. It says, for example, the largest single expenditure on flooding listed in the state's spending list is $1.5 million to the Whatcom County Public Works Department for their floodplain integrated planning process. Okay. Another half a million dollars went to training, quote, young adults to implement ecological restoration and flood prevention projects in the South Puget Sound region. And another $900,000 went to, quote, staff costs to administer the Transboundary Flooding Grant Program. They're just making shit up, you guys. They are just making shit up. So I think it's about like $4.7 billion has come in so far as the result of the CCA. They've spent $1.5 billion of it on climate stuff. Only $7.1 million went to anything even remotely related to flooding, even though that was what they said one of their predominant climate concerns. And then most of that just went to staffing and weird stuff called training for young adults to implement ecological restoration and flood prevention projects in the South Puget Sound region and transboundary flooding grant programs. They're just making stuff up to justify taxing you more money, taxing you out of your car, making everything more expensive, and then they just dole it out to their cronies and their allies who create these nonprofits overnight to get this grant money. And as we know, that grant money isn't, there's no oversight, there's no auditing. And so it's just some people getting rich off of state contracts over climate. And nothing's actually being done. And so then we flip to the amount of money spent on cycling, which is, again, if you're saying flooding is the existential threat, you know, but you're spending more money teaching kids to ride a bike, that makes more sense. It says the amount of CCA money dedicated to reducing the impacts of flooding is relatively small. During the first 2 years of the CCA, more was spent on each of the following programs than addressing flood risk. So not just bicycle education for elementary and middle schoolers, but also personnel-related costs to implementing the Climate Pollution Reduction Program, conversion to hybrid electric propulsion, matching funds for the U.S. Department of Energy Hydrogen Hub, and HVAC improvements at Chief Leschi School. HVAC improvements at one school cost more than the totality of what they've spent on flooding risks, despite them saying that was one of their primary concerns for needing the CCA in the first place. Makes a lot of sense. Total grift. And I blame no one except the voters of Washington State for not repealing the CCA when they had an opportunity to do so, because I don't know that that opportunity will come again. All right, we've got some more climate news. This is positive. President Donald Trump forcing Washington State to keep open a coal-fired plant for the time being. First, I have encouraged you guys, before we get to that story, to take the FirstMark Challenge. FirstMarkInsurance.com, FirstMarkInsurance.com. We hear from viewers all the time that they've had just a great experience with FirstMark, either saved saved a bunch of money, or they left just feeling more confident in the insurance that they already had, knowing that it was the best insurance they could get at the best price. Viewer Christine says she heard her carrier was dissolving, kind of panicked because she has really complicated insurance, two businesses, a house, three cars. And she's like, I guess I'll finally do what Brandy has been telling me to do and call Firstmark, took the Firstmark challenge, saving $10,000 a year. I mean, come on. It doesn't get any better than that. So firstmarkinsurance.com, firstmarkinsurance.com. The very best part is they work for you, not the insurance company. So they always have your best interest in mind. All right, this headline from the Center Square, Washington coal-fired plant ordered to remain open. So this is going to be good for Washingtonians. The Trump administration on Wednesday issued an emergency order requiring a coal-fired power plant in Washington state to remain open this winter, citing a need to ensure grid reliability in the months ahead. Energy Secretary Chris Wright directed Canada-based power generation company TransAlta to keep Unit 2 of the Centralia Generating Station, located about 65 miles south of Seattle, available to operate until March 16th. The Energy Department said the order minimizes the risk and cost of blackouts across the Northwest, which, remember, the state has warned us about. At a time when it is busy, 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 limiting options to power homes because of the climate, they're also saying, oh, we could have a bunch of blackouts this year. And a common sense person would say, well, we can't have that. Was it last year we had blackouts that were lasting like 6-7 days in certain areas, people without power waiting for it to be restored, all while the state is working very hard to ban natural gas and other options? It's like they want us to suffer. I don't get it. A little more background here from the Center Square. TransAlta had scheduled a permanent shutdown of Unit 2 at the end of 2025, that is at the behest of the state of Washington. In early December, the company signed a deal that would allow it to convert the unit to gas-fired power generation with planned capacity of 700 megawatts. Unit 1 at the plant was decommissioned in December of 2020. The order to keep Unit 2 open comes 8 months after President Donald Trump authorized the Energy Department to use emergency powers to force soon-to-retire coal plants to remain operational. The order declared a national energy emergency due to surging electricity demand. It aims to remove federal regulatory barriers that undermine coal production, encouraging the utilization of coal to meet growing domestic energy demands, increasing American coal exports, and ensuring that federal policy does not discriminate against coal production or coal-fired electricity generation. So this is basically a short-term solution still, though, to try to prevent these unpredictable blackouts that we're having across the Northwest and in Washington state. But our friend Brian Haywood, who is with Let's Go Washington and helped to bankroll the initiative to protect natural gas. Remember, that is one of the initiatives that was actually passed by voters. And then what happened? Because they wanted energy choice, right? Governor Inslee's like, we're suing over that. So Washington voters said, hey, we want to keep our natural gas. You know, it helps with predictability. And Jay Inslee said, no, I don't think so. And so the state is still fighting over this in court to block you from being able to have natural gas and eventually force you to have to retrofit your home if you use natural gas right now, which will cost some homeowners up to $45,000. And Brian Haywood had a great just explanation of the absurdity of all of this. He said, okay, Washington state is forcing a coal plant to shut down, but there's not enough energy for the winter. The backup is supposed to be a new gas plant, but the state is fighting to ban natural gas in the state as well. He says the state is taking $2 billion a year from drivers to punish them for using gasoline, but that money is not being properly tracked, nor is it impacted in improving CO2 emissions. And grifty NGOs are feeding at the trough with almost zero oversight as to their effective use of taxpayer funds. He said the state is not run by science or logic. And you can't make sense of any of that. And like, what is the goal, right? I'm totally on board with, you know, taking care of this wonderful planet of ours. But if you actually care about the planet, you should want everything being done to make sense, the goals being set to be something we can accomplish, and not to make changes until we have a system in place so that the changes can be successful. And we're way, way out over our skis in Washington state. You can't ban and shut down the coal plants when you're telling us we're not going to have enough power and we're going to have blackouts. And then you say that converting those to gas is the better option, but then you're trying to ban gas as well. And you want us to rely on solar and wind when studies have been done showing that it is actually impossible in the state of Washington to reach the wind and solar goals that you've set for us, because one third of our land mass would have to be used for solar and wind farms. And then we'd also have to add some offshore wind farms to supplement, because it's not really a very sunny place, so a lot of the solar isn't going to work very well. And then in the meantime, all of us just suffer. Makes absolutely no sense. All right, we're going to continue on the energy front in our segment, Unbelievable. Okay, I got sent from a viewer their Cascade natural gas bill. I guess it's just been a long time since I like actually looked at my energy bill. Maybe I ought to open it up and do that. Because one of the things that sticks out to me, and we're going to talk about something very specific, but the number of like individual little charges that add up to so much, you've got relatively, you know, inexpensive to actually get the energy that you need to heat your home, etc., and the gas you need to heat your home. But then all these other fees and taxes and costs that are just added on, the list goes on, provisional plant adjustment, intervener funding, decoupling mechanism, conservation, commission fee, unprotected edit, therms, CARES cost recovery, climate act fee. I mean, it's absolutely insane. And this is a bill, by the way, for 2 weeks. 2 weeks of natural gas, okay? There was, though, it was sent to me by a viewer because of this little line item. COVID-19 costs. Let me check the date here. Carry the six. December of 2025. Why in the holy hell, this viewer wondered, do I have a line item charge for COVID-19 costs? And I told them, I don't know, but I will sure as hell look into it for you. So this is the explanation sent to us for all that we wanted from Cascade Natural Gas, an explanation for all of the individual charges on that bill, because some of them don't make any sense. It's like reading a foreign language. This is what it says for the COVID-19 cost that was on that customer's bill. This charge collects the costs incurred due to the moratoriums on disconnections and late fees imposed by Governor Inslee's COVID proclamation, as approved and modified in Order 1 through Order 6 by the Cascade Natural Gas Commission. So Cascade Natural Gas approved adding this charge to recoup costs they incurred due to the moratorium on natural gas and energy disconnections and late fees. So in other words, this customer and all other Cascade Natural Gas customers have to pay for people who didn't pay their bills during the pandemic, because of Jay Inslee's like extensive emergency rules and, oh, nobody can get kicked out of their apartment, nobody can have their gas or heat cut off, etc. And again, without any sort of proof to show, hey, I lost a job or I've lost income. No, none of that mattered. So you had this period of time, a long period of time, where people could just decide, I'm not going to pay my bill. There's no late fee. They aren't going to be able to shut off my energy. So, you know, Cascade Natural Gas had to take a hit, as did other companies. And so now who has to pay for that? All of you. Even if you paid your bill on time every single month, you still, until 2028, we asked them, how long do they have to do this? How long does this last? Well, you will continue to see that line item on your bill until February 28, 2028. That's, so Jay Inslee's emergency order ended, gosh, was it, it says 900 days, it was like 3 years. It was, I believe the fall of, if I remember, this is going to be a good, it was either October or November of 2023, I believe is when his emergency order came to an end. So 5 years after even Washington State admitted that COVID was over, you're going to be paying this little COVID-19 fee on your energy bill, because Jay Inslee just let people for a couple of years not pay their energy bills, even if they didn't lose a job or have no disruption whatsoever in their income. 5 years after even Washington State acknowledged COVID was over, which is really 7 years or 6 or 7 years after COVID actually ended. Was I right on the date, the end of his proclamation? I think it was October or November of 2023. So, yep, 5 years later, you're still going to be paying the price. So to our viewer, I hope that explains, doesn't justify them, but explains all these additional costs you're facing for your natural gas. All right, can we fit in a second real quick little unbelievable? Go ahead. Why not? It's our last live show of the year. Ah, I was right. October 31st. See, I said October or November. Last day in October 2023. All right. The socialist Katie Wilson is just days away from taking office as the new mayor of Seattle. And what does she want? Your money. I don't even know what to make of this. I have never heard of this. Now, often when somebody runs for mayor, and this could be a creative way of trying to recoup campaign funds, or often when somebody runs for public office, they spend more than they brought in, so they have to retire their campaign debt. And so even after they won, they have campaign debt that they're personally responsible for unless they can raise more money. So I don't know if this is just an effort, a creative way for her to make an excuse to get money out of people. Maybe that's what this is. But she sent out an email to her supporters, make your gift to the Katie Wilson Office Fund. Okay. Dear friend, wow, what a few weeks it has been since Katie was declared the winner, blah, 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 talks about what she's been up to, meeting with her new transition team. Says, there are just a few of more steps before I take office in January. Today, I'm reaching out about another important front, our public office fund. Our public office fund is an important fund that covers a number of expenses for the mayor's office that aren't included in the city budget. This can include sending out mailings that educate people about important city issues, travel expenses for the mayor and her staff on city business, or tickets to events hosted by community organizations. Click here to donate to Mayor Wilson's office fund. What are you talking about? First of all, if you're traveling on city business, your travel expenses are paid for. Mailings that educate people about important city issues. So just like mailings you want to send out for your campaign to justify things you're trying to do as mayor? I guess if people want to donate and they're dumb enough to donate to that. Tickets to events hosted by community organizations. The socialist loves free stuff. Socialist's like, I don't want to pay for tickets to events held by community organizations. I don't want to pay for any travel. So she wants you to pay for it because that's what socialists do. So it really shouldn't be a surprise to anyone. And if you're dumb enough to donate to the mayor's office fund and believe the lie that this is some sort of official thing that the mayor needs to raise private money for, if you're dumb enough to click on that and give her money, then by all means, you deserve to lose money to that office fund. How outrageous is that? All right, we'll get to some national news and Florida report coming up next. First, our friend Wes Jones is the guy you want to call if you're looking to sell your home in 2026 and get that process rolling. It can take a long time, especially if you know that you need some cosmetic upgrades to your home. You definitely are going to have to spend some time going through that process. And Jay is a recent client of Wes Jones. She said, truly a 5-star experience from start to finish. Wes and his team are all about relationships, authenticity, and results. Over 3 years, Wes guided me through renovations, referred great contractors, and helped me make smart choices. When it was time to sell my childhood home, they staged it beautifully, hosted open houses that felt like neighborhood events, and brought in 200 plus people. We got 4 offers and sold for $100,000 over asking. You won't find a better team. You know what? I have to agree. Go to sellwithwest.com, sellwithwest.com if you're looking to sell your home and get the ball rolling now. Sellwithwest.com. It really is a better way to sell your home. All right. One quick national story before we get to our final Florida report of the year. I don't get the point of Trump's primetime address last night. It was pointless. I'm sorry. It was pointless. I know maybe he was trying to talk about economic worries and whatever it is. We got the midterms next year. So just get a message out to Americans before midterms start in earnest. I thought it was kind of pointless. If you're given a primetime address as the president, you better be ending a war or starting a war or killing a major terrorist. That's really the only reason I'd ever want to hear from you in a primetime address. But talked about the economy and also promised Americans that 2026, you will see the biggest tax returns ever.
Next year, you will also see the results of the largest tax cuts in American history that were really accomplished through our great, big, beautiful bill, perhaps the most sweeping legislation ever passed in Congress. We wrapped 12 different bills up into one beautiful bill. That includes no tax on tips, no tax on overtime, and no tax on Social Security, for our great seniors. Under these cuts, many families will be saving between $11,000 and $20,000 a year, and next spring is projected to be the largest tax refund season of all time.
You know what? I hope so. I don't anticipate getting a tax refund. I don't think anybody who owns a business is anticipating getting a tax refund. So I'm a little bit jealous. I miss the days of it. I don't think I'll ever get a tax refund again. I looked forward to that tax refund. It was usually like $2,300. Oh yeah. What would you use to spend your tax refunds on, Nicole?
I'm trying to think. Probably bills.
Oh, bills. Nah, I wasted it. I was like, oh, great. Because you don't expect it, right? You're like, oh, I paid my taxes. They're gone forever. And then you get a nice tax refund. So I don't know. I don't know if it's going to help all Americans, but no taxes on tips, no taxes on overtime. I do think that will be different for a lot of people who rely on those things.
I thought the gifts to the
service
military
members
was pretty cool.
Yeah, I don't, only because, like, I get it. Yay, military. But also, the money that we have coming in through tariffs, I think, should be used to pay down the national debt.
Sure.
He's coming up with all these, like, you know, Trump fund for kids. He talked about the tariff dividends and all this stuff. It's like, okay, I get it. We want to send out a check to Americans before the midterms and celebrate our service members, but we've got a debt issue, and I'd rather the money go there. Sorry, service members. Sorry.
Wow.
I know, right?
Bomb
all right. Humbug. Well, I know we do Florida Report every week. I'm going to be spending my vacation in Florida visiting my sister, which I'm very excited about. But in the meantime, we still have a lot of news going on in Florida. Let's get to our weekly segment, Florida Report.
It's not even controversial anymore.
People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Miranda, hello.
Hello.
First Florida Report in your new house. Last Florida Report of the year.
Yes, so first and last.
I see you haven't moved much in.
No, I have. It's just all in front of me right now. Okay. I'm still trying to catch a vibe of what I want to do in here. So until that happens, you get me on the white back screen.
I thought people would have fun hearing about the vibe that's being caught outside. So you've had peacocks outside your new house that just have not left. And apparently your house comes with peacocks.
Yeah, my house comes with peacocks. The first day that I was here before I moved anything in, there was like five males with their tails open, just like waving them at each other. And now every morning I'm in the back having coffee and there's a handful, probably like 10 peacocks and two white ones that just roam through the backyard eating bugs and sticks and stuff. And it's kind of nice.
That's your dream. The animals just find you. You and Nicole, I love animals, but I feel like the animals find you guys.
They do. They do. Yeah. And I did find out that a group of peacocks is called an ostentation.
Really? Yeah. They are quite ostentatious.
Yep. So I thought that was very fitting for them.
Oh, wow. The more you know. Always learning things on Florida Report. All right. Governor Ron DeSantis was the keynote speaker at a term limits summit. This is a popular concept, I think, with most American people, that members of Congress should be limited. We've seen, you know, Nancy Pelosi, Mitch McConnell, people just want to die in their seats. So what specifically are they recommending? And this is like a group of just leaders from across the country who are in favor of term limits, right?
Yeah, so the U.S. term limits is actually a nonpartisan, nonprofit group that's been around since the 90s. They go around educating and advocating for term limits in all elected offices at the state level, local level, and especially at the federal level, just to try to push like fresh perspectives in Washington and make sure people aren't just getting comfortable and not actually doing what they're voted in to do.
Yeah. So specific to Congress, they're recommending 3 terms in the House of Representatives, 2 terms in the Senate. So that, or they could do both. So that would be 6 years total in the House. And then you could run for Senate and do 2 terms, which would be 12 years or a combination of the two of those things. Governor DeSantis, when he was speaking, he talked about, because there's this notion, and I think partially it's true, the longer you spend in Congress, the more power that you can get, right? Because you get good committee assignments, you can get chairmanships, and you can just, you know, get rise on the rise to different leadership positions. So then if you bring someone new, they're like starting at rock bottom. But Governor DeSantis made an interesting point about sometimes staying there for an, you know, indefinite period of time can actually hurt the ability to get stuff done.
Bureaucrats are going to get more popular or get more powerful. Excuse me, the modern Congress, where as careerism has increased, the Congress has neutered itself and given more power to the permanent bureaucracy. It has grown dramatically over the last 50 years. They don't use the power of the purse, which is their most powerful weapon, the way the founders intended. That's what's happening under this current regime. I think if you had term limits, I think people would go on a mission. They know that they're going to be there for 6 years in the House, and maybe they run for Senate, but even if not, you go. Man, you're going to want to have something to show for it. You know, you're going to go up there and actually want to get the job done. So the incentives are just different. Those arguments, I don't think, you know, make a lot of sense. And, you know, you do have some people say, oh, I don't believe in Article 5. I don't know. It could be a crazy convention. Well, what would happen if you got to 31, 32 states? I mean, Congress would end up passing it.
Yeah. And so I understand that notion that, oh, gosh, I only got 6 years. And really, only 2 years are guaranteed in the House. I mean, people who assume I can be here for as long as I'd like. But let's say they know they only have 6 years. Well, they better get something done in 6 years. So there's maybe more pressure on them to do so.
Yeah, I think so, too. And also more pressure for them to, like, as a whole, kind of work together to actually get stuff done rather than just pushing it off to the next few years, because they're sitting there for how many, 30, 40 years in some cases?
Yeah, crazy. Longer than we've been alive. All right. As we said on the show last week, Miami has elected a female Democrat. So they don't elect women there for mayor. They don't elect Democrats. They don't elect white people. It's usually like a dude who's Hispanic and a Republican. Yeah. Well, now they have mayor-elect Eileen Higgins, first woman ever elected to lead the city. And turns out she's just really going for it, immediately, going to focus on inclusion as a key strategy. And then she also wants to end any sort of cooperation the city has with ICE.
Yeah, so she's actually being sworn in today. So she will be officially our mayor down here in Miami. But yeah, she made a statement about how there's no reason for the city of Miami's police department to be doing the work of federal immigration enforcement agents. So she wants to reel back on the signing of the cooperative agreement of 287G that basically every law enforcement agency in the state signed to work together with, you know, federal agents on this whole matter. Which I kind of expected to be one of the first things she did down here, just because it kind of just fits the Democratic playbook to just go ahead and like reverse anything that's popular in the administration right now.
Yeah. So look, I don't want, she said, there's no reason, as you alluded to, no reason in the city of Miami our police department should be doing the job of federal immigration enforcement. I tend to agree with that notion. I mean, you have federal agents to carry out immigration efforts. You have local police to do other sort of crime fighting. So I understand that sentiment. But there's a difference between that and then actively standing in the way or not cooperating when your cooperation can help ICE. And that's what these blue city mayors are doing, is they won't honor detainers. Jails won't hold, you know, criminal illegal aliens. And then, you know, if they need help, ICE needs help, you know, serving, trying to track someone down, like police can help with that and get someone off the streets, especially if they've committed other crimes while they're here. So, like, let's not pretend that what you're trying to do is just, you know, keep everyone in their lane.
Yeah, she's spoken a lot about the fear factor that comes with this agreement, that immigrant communities are afraid. And, you know, it all just, to me, comes down to the same thing. Like, are you a legal immigrant or are you not? Mm-hmm. Like, legal immigrants have nothing to fear. And like you said, like, I think that partnership has to happen, because there are situations where it could be like safety and stuff like that. If you have ICE going in to do a raid, like bringing local law enforcement in to like reinforce them, it just seems like a no-brainer partnership. So to speak out loud that that shouldn't happen is kind of unproductive.
Well,
to me,
in a city that's been electing Republicans and Republicans, so it's not like it's some deep blue city that would cheer on and celebrate that. And I don't even know if the state will allow Miami to do that or if that will fly. And then you have a lot of legal immigrants there who don't want the illegal immigrants around. Yeah. So I don't think it's going to work out the way she thinks. All right. Some other good news. That wasn't good news, but some good news out of Florida. So we talked about this a couple years ago now. Florida passed a law to prevent kids from going into these like drag shows that are sexual in nature, which makes sense. It's like you don't send kids into a strip club, and some of these drag shows are obviously sexual, nudity, all these things. So we hadn't talked about the fact that that's been tied up in the courts, but now it can go into effect. So starting when, no children in drag shows in Florida?
starting right now. So basically the law was already put into effect in 2023. Almost immediately it was challenged and then a judge blocked it. So from, I think it was December of 2023 till now, December of 2025, it has been kind of tied up in appeals courts and everything. And even still, there's going to be challenges because it's a little bit, quote unquote, vague as to what explicit content is and what kids should and should not be able to see. And I can understand that to a certain degree, but if you're questioning what's appropriate for a kid or not, like, I'm assuming you don't understand what's good for a kid or not. Maybe you shouldn't let them come to your event. But as of right now, that law is back into effect.
Yeah, so basically with a little narrow exception, so it allows the state to enforce the law across Florida, except for at Hamburger Mary's, the venue which challenged the law's constitutionality. And so, you know, they'll still have the challenge going on, but it's like, okay, Hamburger Mary's, whatever, that's a weird name for a place doing sexually explicit drag and wanting to have kids there. That's strange. But for everyone else in Florida, for the time being, no kids at drag shows that are explicit. I would argue, I mean, I've said with some narrow exceptions, I've been to many drag shows. Rarely have I been to one that would be appropriate for children. Maybe never. Same. So ridiculous.
I try to think at all the ones that I've been to because we have a very big drag culture in Miami.
I've been to some in Miami with you.
Yeah, there's drag brunches everywhere and they're super fun. But I'm like in my head, like, no, yeah, there's not a single one I would take my kids to.
No.
Let alone having them out in the streets or like what you've shown at elementary schools when school's not in session. Like, you know, this is a win for the kids. Yeah, it really is.
It is. And the pervy parents can just deal with it. So, all right, Miranda, I'm going to come see you for my break here in the holidays. So I'll be seeing you soon. Thank you very much.
Happy holidays.
It's not even controversial anymore.
Freedom. People know in Florida their freedoms are going to be respected.
Oh, I just can't wait. Sun, palm trees. Yeah, that's basically it. Sun, palm trees, drinks, beach.
Peacocks.
Can't wait. Peacocks. Yes, peacocks. All right, let's get to our daily subscriber show poll, which is sent out on Patreon, Locals, and X. Do you support banning gender surgeries for minors in all cases is our question today. So all cases, I think, being the aspect of that where maybe there'll be some disagreement or maybe not. Nicole, do you, and this is surgery specific, so I'm not talking about gender hormone blockers, puberty, whatever it is. You're looking at me like, what a dumb, I wish you could see Nicole's face right now. She's looking at me like, Brandy, this is the stupidest poll you've ever done. What a stupid question. Yeah. And you made it our last poll of the year. You're a moron. That was literally the face she was giving me. Go ahead, Nicole.
I'm like, am I not understanding this correctly?
Okay, I'm sorry.
Jeez. Is it a trick question?
That was the best I could come up with today. What do you got?
I'm going to say, yes, I do support banning.
Okay, great. Me too. Okay. All right. 2% of people on Patreon said no, and 10% on Locals said, no, I do not. And so I guess there's a little bit of disagreement there.
You can wait till you're 18. Sorry.
Yes. Oh, 100%. Let me see. Julie, I remember some of the dumbest things I thought I needed when I was a kid, including into my late teens, that would have been very detrimental to my health and sanity. Oh, I mean, a million things that you want to do as a kid that if your parents let you do literally everything.
Oh, my gosh.
I don't
gosh.
Even know if I would be alive, quite frankly. Michael said he has one exception, natal malformation. So I don't know if there's, I have to literally Google that, but I assume it means some like actual genital malformation that isn't the result of like you wanting something changed due to.
Okay.
It says a natal malformation, more commonly called a congenital malformation or birth defect, is a structural functional problem in a baby's body that develops during pregnancy and is present at birth, affecting organs, body parts, or systems. Yeah, I mean, if it's something that's like, you're not trying to change your gender. You just got to fix something. I mean, I hope there's
a
carve out
physical,
in the law for that.
That's a physical fix, I feel like. And not like, I think I'm a different gender. I'd like to change something selectively.
Yeah. So hopefully there's carve outs for all of that in the law. Let me see here. Oh, I can't read that one. Delaney, I do not understand how in Idaho a child can get a tattoo at 14 with parental consent, but in Washington that's illegal. However, your child can decide to permanently mutilate themselves and they don't even need your permission.
They're a bunch of hypocrites.
Kids in Idaho can get tattoos at 14?
I wouldn't be surprised.
I mean, that's a little much for me. It's not, you know, well, I don't know. 14 with parental consent, it says. You have to have parental consent. I'm assuming that you live in Idaho or otherwise know that to be able to know. I don't know. Crazy. Huh. Let's see. Old Sub Sailor. Transing and indoctrinating kids is pure far-left militant communism. I more and more agree. More and more. Alan, kids can get a tattoo till 18, but a six-year-old can pick a gender? Wow. Kids can't get a tattoo till 18. So in some states, in our state, for sure. Karen Taylor, finally a common sense bill. Now they need to do the same thing with mental health, especially in Washington. 13 is not an appropriate age to cut parents out of their decision-making and medication. I agree. Like, let the kid get it, but you can't just hide stuff from parents. It's so bizarre to me, especially when parents are paying for it. Who's paying that bill that comes in the mail? A parent. Wild. Let's see, some comments on other topics on the initiatives. Chuck Heller gave us $5 for Andre's security. Might get him a minute of security, but thank you. Stephanie, I mailed mine in. How do we check to see if our signatures were counted? There's no way to do that.
No.
There's no way to do that.
Cross your fingers.
Cross your fingers. Yeah, sorry. On the WEA, our latest round of leaked video, they're going after the rich in their strategy meeting. B. Larson, no matter how much money they get, they will want to spend more. Oh, 100%. They're always thinking of new shit they want us to pay for. No, it's time to say no. On more CCA money being spent on bikes than flood preparation, Allison, I love your show, but seriously, I get so pissed after listening because of the absolute reckless spending the government does in this state. But that's why we have fun, too, because I don't want you to be pissed. I want you to be angry, but also laugh a little bit, you know, and us to have just a little, safe space of sanity.
You to get your people on board.
Yeah.
Fight back.
Dan B.
Off the nonsense.
Climate funding is nothing more than government theft. I more and more so agree every day that goes by. Mayor-elect Wilson still begging for money. Jules said, this is the same thing Mom Donnie did. Yeah, he phrased it a little different, but he was asking for money to retire campaign debt. Just be honest about it. Just say, hey, and I think, you know, if people supported your campaign, hey, we tried to get across the finish line. We knew it was going to be a close race. We spent more than we had. Socialists, right? And then ask them for money that way. Don't say it's for an office fund to pay for travel that you'll have to incur as mayor. That's ridiculous. You get driven around. What are you even talking about?
Go to some fun things.
On Florida Report, Sergeant Buck, we should be asking why the drag queens are craving an audience comprised of children. I agree. Why do you want children to watch you in a thong spread eagle? You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
In your fishnets with your fake... It just doesn't make any sense.
No.
Wow, we've got some super chats heading into the Christmas break. You know, I love this. Nice little Christmas present. Mike doesn't get me presents, so your super chats
because you are the only
presents
to.
I get. That's true. Nicole gave me a nice present today. Yeah. She gives the best gifts. She got me the official White House ornament of 2025. Yeah. And it's beautiful. It's very elegant. It's like a wreath. And she said it's because this is the year I went to the White House. So I'll always remember when I look at my tree, the ornament as the year I went to the White House in case I never get invited back. Let's see. I'll read a couple super chats here. Yes, I appreciate you guys. Eric Rose Green. Brandy, please discuss Canada's three-year-old law violating voted in under Trudeau. Non-citizens cannot buy land, period. Protect sovereign citizens, reduce housing crisis, Indian reservations in Mexico. I'm not sure what this means. Please discuss Canada's three-year-old law voted in under Trudeau. So does it prohibit non-citizens from buying land or does it allow them to buy land? I'm not clear. Matthew Cook, Christmas bonus for promoting common sense above and beyond the call of duty. Merry Christmas, Brandy, Nicole, Miranda, and Dee. Happy New Year and cheers. Thank you. That is so nice. Mm. Do we go above and beyond the call of duty? I don't know. What is the call of duty demand of us? You know, I'm not sure. I know I'm tired and grumpy this week and I need a vacation really bad. And unfortunately, we still have tapings to do tomorrow, so we're not quite off yet. Big Princess, I'm going to join in too. $50 super chat. Son Miller, the same. We appreciate you guys.
Wow.
Hawks 89, a 9-year-old boy is living in a tent on Aurora Avenue with his fentanyl addicted parents. CPS and SPD refuse to remove him and place him in a safe home. The boy is sick and does not attend school. Toxic empathy. Absolutely. That can't be the last thing I read. That cannot be the last thing I read. I'll read this last one. Little Miss J. I will be out of work for a few weeks due to Christmas break. Life as a school bus driver. Happy holidays and much love to you And Miranda and Daryl, thank you so much. That's nice. Well, yeah, a little break during the holidays, not driving school bus. So hopefully you get some rest and relaxation. Nicole, thank you. Good shirt for today. A little Santa Claus on it.
Yeah, we can really see it, but it was there.
Yeah, it was there. And with that, let's get to our closing sanity check. Oh, this is my favorite one. We're heading into 2026. We're heading into wild territory. And in the United States, I don't think it's unheard of for the presidential election for 2028 really to start in 2026. And of course, you got the midterms. So there was some poll put out saying in a head-to-head for the president of the United States, who would win, AOC or J.D. Vance? And it was like 51% for AOC. Now, I don't think that poll is very accurate, but AOC is pretty fired up about it.
Do you think that you'll beat, that you could beat J.D. Vance in a head-to-head race for president, as polling suggests, in 2028?
Listen, these polls, like, 3 years out are, you know, they are what they are. But let the record show, I would stomp him. I would stomp him.
Thank you, Congresswoman.
I would stomp him. Please, Congresswoman, please run for president. You, Kamala, the guy from California, Gavin Newsom. Please, I would love to see all of you run campaigns for president of the United States. That would be the best Christmas present or wish I could ask for this season. All right, before we hit the closing, that has been our closing sanity check. That has been today's episode of Undivided. Before we hit the closing sequence. Right. No, that's fine, Nicole. She was over it. She's like, I'm not even listening to you anymore. We will have episodes of Sundays with Subscribers. We're doing a little quick switcheroo. We were going to have Harmeet Dhillon on this Sunday. Instead, it'll be the Sunday after. We're going to have Congressman Dan Newhouse talk about his decision to retire, you know, his decision to vote to impeach the president all those years ago, and how it impacted his career moving forward. We have a great guest as well for the Sunday after that, but I'm not quite going to say who yet. Got to see if he bails on our interview. And then we'll have some special reports out as well for the rest of the year. So follow us on Patreon, Locals, or X. You can subscribe. Go to undividedpod.com. That's the best Christmas gift you give me. Subscribe. Stop being a hanger-on and finally suck it up and subscribe to Undivided and help us give common sense a comeback. Undividedpod.com. We love all of you. Have a wonderful Christmas. And we will see you in the new year. Nicole, any parting goodbye? Well, your mic's not on. That's okay, Nicole. You ruined it for everyone.
Merry Christmas.
Ruined our final show of the year. No, Merry Christmas.
Happy New Year.
Okay, bye, everyone.